And this is BBC Radio 4, where now, as part of our film season, the BAFTA award-winning British filmmaker Asif Kapadia journeys deep into London's underground film scene.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Exploding Cinema!
It's Saturday night in South London, and in a disused and derelict office space near the Elephant and Castle, Exploding Cinema is holding one of its shows.
Right, we've got a wonderful selection of films for you this evening. I'm hoping we have some of the filmmakers in the audience. So the first film we have for you this evening is from Rising Tide, Women No Regrets by Helen Stone.
This is no ordinary film screening. No hushed reverence from the well-behaved audience. No pitch-dark room framing a large screen. No neat rows of padded seating. To enter an Exploding Cinema show is to step into a cinematic grotto. There's film projecting on every wall. Vintage Super 8 footage ticking away on a constant loop. Shimmering light and images. Comedy, horror, animation, a live band are playing in the corner. And on the main screen, there's a succession of about 20 short films. The audience are sitting on cushions, watching them, or wondering about chatting and drinking. We are at the heart of London's underground cinema scene.
Is this one of your bits of kit then?
Exploding Cinema is different from all the other screening venues I've been to. You're immersed in a world, there's colour everywhere, it's really magical.
There's so much visual stimulation, and to watch a film in a kind of psychedelic fairy wonderland is the whole experience.
You don't go to Exploding Cinema to bow down in front of the screen. Film is there as part of other things. It's part of drinking, it's part of meeting people, part of music and atmosphere. It's more something that comes in through the skin.
It's a mixed bag, but the filmmakers are here, so if you want to criticise them, you could say that I thought that was rubbish, and they can say to you, OK, you show your film. That's the challenge of Exploding Cinema, is you think it's rubbish, show us yours.
Okay, names of films, let's see. Train Diary, that was a couple of films made on a mobile phone by someone in Greece. Allergic, The Sack, Elephant Without a Tail, Where is Elise? Venlafaxine Hydrochloride, Big Leafy Buggers, Black Star.
Exploding Cinema, or Exploding for the initiated, is turning 20 this year and is still going strong. A collective of filmmakers and film lovers, it pledges to screen any film that somebody submits. No selection, no censorship. Exploding Cinema holds firmly by the principle that the question of what's good and what's not is solely for the audience to decide.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, Tom, if we just go for a tape, if you want to start recording, Josh. Oh, yeah, you need to...
Rid Cook is 23 and a projectionist at a cinema in Cambridgeshire, but his real passion is to make films. Recently, he showed his own film at Exploding Cinema.
Hello, this is my 60-second documentary about the stuff what is in this room.
Called My 60-Second Documentary About the Stuff What Is In This Room.
It's my claymation thing I made up. Look at the Grim Reaper, it's really realistic. There's an actual skull in there. Mum, what do you think about this room?
A fantastic room, keeps more drugs.
This is my video games machine.
It was such a success, he's now working on the sequel.
We're making a documentary about my house. The challenge is it has to be 120 seconds long, which is 2 minutes. I'm hoping to enter this film into Exploding Cinema once it's done, and then hopefully it'll get a screening, and that'd be really cool. Okay, yeah, should we just do one more take?
Yeah.
Okay, for something different this time.
Okay.
Okay, this is my friend Tom. He's never been in this house before. What do you think?
Cold.
Cold. Yeah. It is quite cold.
I first came across Exploding Cinema back in the early 90s, when the group were just getting going. And I was just starting out as a filmmaker myself. I was 20, fresh out of film school. I had big aspirations and heaps of motivation, and a thick pile of rejection letters from every film funding body in the UK. And I had nowhere to show my films. At the time, I knew no one in the industry and had no idea if I was ever going to be able to make a career out of my passion for filmmaking. I spotted a flyer on a pinboard at the National Film Theatre one day about a film screening taking place that weekend in a room above a pub in South London. They were inviting submissions from, well, anyone. Anyone with something to show. With Nothing to Lose and my first short film, a documentary I'd made at film school, which had been up till now collecting dust on a shelf, I went along with my hissing VHS of Pizza Man in hand.
The problem about this country is the drink. Because the people, they are nice, the country is rich, everything is fine, but they drink too much. 12 o'clock in the afternoon, I come in town, or I come to Rio, whatever, and I see people, they're already inside the pubs, you know, they're already drinking, 12 o'clock.
It's a portrait of a young Brazilian lawyer, Taborda, who came to the UK for a new life and ended up working in a pizzeria for his uncle in South Wales. Not unlike my latest film, Senna, which will be released in the UK this summer, it's about a cultural outsider. In Pizza Man, Taborda is coming to terms with his new life and his battle with the local gangs in crime-ridden Newport.
Because in Italy or in Brazil, right, if somebody come here drunk and say, F you, I'm gonna beat you, something like that, over there you take like a very, very serious offense. So you probably you're gonna fight to kill him because nobody come to your place and say, ah, I'm gonna beat you up, you know, things like that. But here is different because you see two British people, they swear, they call each other with bad names, and then they fight, they bleed. And then after 5 minutes, they shake the hands, you know? So it's very difficult to us to understand that. But now, once you learn, it's more easy. My uncle, he don't know. He still don't know how to deal with these people.
Yeah. If you click on it, yeah, you can play it and just forward. I haven't looked at this for a very long time. So this was shown at Exponent Cinema and Atari graphics.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Just in this road, yeah. In 2 months or 3 months,
but recently, I met up with three of the founders of the group, all experimental filmmakers in their own right. Duncan Riki, Janet Thomas and Paul Tarago, to rummage through their archive of films shown at Exploding and to hear how it all began.
I mean, some of the work was quite explicit, as I remember. I mean, is it?
Very weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Something a bit more experimental. Mine's quite a conventional.
Should I put a vacuum on?
Let's put something in.
You could put this mix-up one as well.
Yeah.
It's in the white.
Oh, mix-up. Was it now, City's Life?
This is a classic Exploding Cinema film. This guy lives in Nottingham, calls himself a mix-up, and he brought to us this really extraordinary kind of bedroom Super 8 animation that is one of the most imaginative pieces of work we had. It just blew us all away. You can see it's an absolutely zero budget because it's made in a bedroom with little toys and objects and bed sheets and blankets and plasticine, but it's incredibly crafted.
One of the reasons the group came about is because we were going to arty screenings and watching films with, like, academics and luminaries from the experimental film world. There was no audience to watch them.
One of the most politically radical among the Exploding founders and author of Subversion, The Definitive History of Underground Cinema, is Duncan Riki.
So we said, all right, then, we'll create an audience, and the audience can come, and if your film is good, let the audience decide. Now, that will be the arbiter.
The inspiration for Exploding Cinema came from some strange filmic goings-on in a disused suntan oil factory in South London's Brixton, the Cool Tan, which in the early 90s a bunch of filmmakers had claimed as a squat.
They were doing a film show in the refrigerator room called Real Love, but in the middle of this film show, this homeless alcoholic stood in front of the screen and opened up a suitcase full of his old clothes and started trying to sell them to the audience. And I was thinking, this is really sort of strange, but you could see that it was just a fantastic intervention. And then I thought, well, I've got to get involved with this.
We are starting off with a video by Small World. I believe it's about activism against the motorway links. The M11, that's it, the M11.
as I remember it, a projector being in the room pretty much, you could hear it clicking. Sometimes the film would tear, you'd have to restart it. Smoking in the room. Yeah. It was that old-fashioned idea of what you imagine it being like, having a screening room going on with everyone around it, eating, drinking, chatting.
I was very keen that it should be sort of ridiculously open and democratic. So we came up with this constitution in which anyone could join the group, and all you had to do to join the group was just come to a meeting. You could have full involvement from that moment on, and everything would be owned collectively. So it'd be non-profit, collective ownership, totally democratic, totally open.
In the early days, the Exploders took a collective principle all the way. They perceived selection as an act of repression, in that it inevitably excluded people. And they were determined that the group should have no stars. Set against the conventional approach to filmmaking, where you need lots of money, it's all about the movie stars, and filmmakers are auteurs. This was radical stuff.
You could not enter the group and then become sort of a star of the group, because there was no such thing. When we made up aliases and things like this.
We were all Pat. Do you remember? We were all Pat.
That's right.
The idea that cinema should be open, inclusive and free can be traced right back, almost to the beginnings of film itself.
Its roots probably lie in the Dada movement.
Ian Christie is Professor of Film and Media History at Birkbeck, University of London.
Dada was a kind of explosion in itself way back in 1916 during the First World War. Absolutely defiant upsurge by artists who said, we are going to create our own platform, we're going to do what we want. Doesn't matter if it's unfashionable. And that Dada spirit has been revived at various intervals in the succeeding years.
But what was important in the 90s, with the proliferation of the Super 8 camera, 16mm and the rise of the camcorder, more and more people were experimenting with the moving image and looking for places to show their work. Meanwhile, organisations that had in the 60s and 70s been champions of free, independent and often subversive cinema had been courted by the Arts Council and other public bodies. It was almost impossible to get a project financed unless you were known or knew the right people. The bodies that existed were perceived as elitist by many up-and-coming filmmakers looking for a platform for their work.
People that made films and showed them in Exploding Cinema were bucking the trend, and that they weren't waiting and not making their film until it got funded. They were just going to a car boot sale, getting a Super 8 camera, making the bloody thing, whether they got funding or not. And that was the ethos of Exploding Cinema. And it was part of a wave of DIY culture. We were on the crest of that wave. This is 3 minutes worth of film, which is a very long time for animation.
Is this your film, Janet?
Yeah, this is a little workshop demonstration movie that I made about how to make an animation. And I'm showing my beloved Super 8 camera and demonstrating how you put a Super 8 cartridge into the camera and how you make your very own stop frame movie. And it comes in a little cartridge like this. This is 3 minutes worth of film, which is a very long time for animation. It fits into the back of my camera like this. It's slightly tongue-in-cheek, to be honest, but there's lots of valuable information in there.
Now that anyone who owns a mobile phone can make a film, it's easier to forget quite what an undertaking it was back then. Helen DeWitt, who produces the London Film Festival and the London Lesbian and Gay Film Festival, was active on the underground cinema scene in the 90s.
It was a lot of palaver to find where do you get the stock, and then you have to post it away for Switzerland for processing and get it back, and you had to have a projector, and then you had to get all your mates round, or you had to get someone who was interested in showing it.
Now, what you saw then was jerky, because this camera recording this is a mere video camera that doesn't...
Now that it's possible for anyone to show pretty much any film online via video sharing websites like YouTube and Vimeo, what does that mean for a group like Exploding Cinema? Does it still have a place?
We did at one point think that the whole YouTube phenomena was going to render redundant the likes of Exploding Cinema, but it absolutely hasn't. In some ways, it's made it all the more necessary, because people are basically just getting all their culture sitting in front of their screens in their bedroom, and people really, really do want something else.
For many people who submit their work to be screened at Exploding, including me back in the day, the shows work almost like filmmaking workshops.
People screen their work there to learn from the audience's reaction and from other filmmakers who, at Exploding, are, of course, more often than not, one and the same.
I want you to watch this coin. I'm going to take this coin, I'm going to throw it in there. It should disappear.
It's kind of like a free film school. Without exams and without the tutors, it is sort of a peer-led film school.
Rosemary Kiviavi is a recent anthropology graduate.
I'll throw it in there again, but it's still back here.
She lives and works in London and makes films in her spare time.
Apologise. What I'm going to do...
She recently showed a short documentary on Exploding about a Scottish ex-soldier's struggle with poverty and drink as he ages, called I'd Never Get a Job at Tesco's.
This Ken, singing with a can of beer in his hand. It's all very handheld style. Then he starts speaking about what happened to him in the army. He killed two people. It was an accident, that's what he says. And because of that, he was put into jail.
I was in the Royal Green Jackets, the army. You know what I mean? Done the Gulf War, done the Falkland War. Then they kicked me out. They used me as a scapegoat. Got court-martialed. 18 months in Colchester, 5 years in a civil prison. They charged me 4 counts of murder. It wasn't murder, man. They were shooting at me. They ran out of ammunition, I shot them. Simple as.
I showed my films in Exploding Cinema because I could show them in Exploding Cinema. I wouldn't have finished this film if there wasn't a possibility of screening it. It's crucial to an artist who's just starting to get that sort of feedback and then go home and re-edit their film and then send it to a festival. Every film which is shown as well, you have to speak about your film on a stage, so it kind of forces you to think about it more deeply and be able to take criticism in that sort of a safe environment.
From Mucky Puppets comes an all-new dimension in screen terror.
I certainly wouldn't have had so many film screenings had it not been for screening at Exploding Cinema, and the people I've met through that have been fantastic.
Don't peep!
Filmmaker Richard Mansfield heads up Mucky Puppets, a film company that produces shadow puppet films of well-known fairy tales, exploring their darker side.
History is made with the first ever sequel to Dr. Heinrich Hoffman's Suck-a-Thumb. You only suck twice.
Based on a true story.
You just never know who you'll meet at an event. You'll meet someone who will want to collaborate or they'll like an aspect. They might want to take that into their own work.
In bringing meat to your table comes this rather nasty fable. When you hear the word slaughter, would you connect it with your son or your daughter?
I would say I'm probably going for a look of something that was perhaps created in the 1930s or the 1940s, so it's got a sort of silent feel to it. And it's black and white. I do use colour in my films, but it'll tend to be for something specific, like it's generally red for blood.
And so follows a game of slaughter.
The shadow puppets for the fairy tale films are very cartoon-like, so they've got quite sort of boxy heads.
The butcher stands, his a knife held tight. Little pig looks scared, overcome with fright. A swift, powerful cut of the blade. Eyes watching, now terribly afraid.
I use my own hands in shadow with the puppet sometimes, and this can represent the adult telling the child off, so the adult becomes a real person and the child remains a puppet.
Let the lesson here be learned, or many more stomachs will be turned. This could be your son or daughter. Children playing a game of slaughter.
The value to filmmakers in showing their work at Exploding Cinema is clear. But what about the assertion the group makes that anyone can make a film and should have the opportunity to screen it? As noble as Exploding Cinema's no selection policy sounds, what does it mean for an audience? Do they really want to sit through a random sample of films with no quality control whatsoever?
Well, it's funny because sometimes we show a film and I don't like it.
Ben Slotover is one of the current crop of Exploders.
And I'm complaining, of course, you know, to someone about it. And then they'll say, my God, that was the best film of the evening. So what do I know? We let the audience decide. At Exploding, it's a bit like a stock ticker for what's coming off the end of the production line. It's just these are all new films and people are trying things out and saying, look, what if I attach a camera to a dog or something, you know, and then they make something and maybe it's rubbish. But the main thing is it's been made and it's like a snapshot of films that people are making right now and right here. And everyone is watching all of them, unless they walk out during one of the rubbish ones.
The beauty of Exploding Cinema events is that the films projected on the main screen are just part of the feast of images to look at. And when it comes to filmmaking group Genetic Moo, who are currently artists in residence at Exploding, the images that they project around the room aren't just for looking at.
We describe our work as interactive video. For the last 5 years, we've been building creatures.
Their latest piece, It's Alive, has been developed especially for Exploding Cinema. Genetic Moo's founder, Nicola Schaumann.
We've designed a piece that is responding to their cinema screen. So we have a webcam that faces the Exploding Cinema screen. Our web camera picks up, for example, colours or lights, wherever it is, relays it to our computer programme, and then we output. And the first piece we did was just outputting, like, bugs of green and red, and it's progressing to something quite maggoty. And so what we've got now is the final stage, where the light actually bores into the wall, or appears to, and reveals maggots within.
It's like drilling a hole through a wall with a torch.
Genetic Moo's programmer, Tim Pickup.
Imagine drilling through a wall and then it reveals a layer of maggots that are wriggling behind it. So the more you shine your torch around, the more maggots you reveal. So it'll be a reflection, a maggoty reflection of everybody's film.
This piece, which actually feeds off all of the films shown at any one Exploding Cinema event, expresses brilliantly the Exploding Cinema ethos of challenging the ways in which we rate film. As far as It's Alive is concerned, all that a film needs to offer in order to be good are some decently exposed images.
We had one terrible experience where we set it up and it was working brilliantly. The first film came on, nothing happened. We thought, oh my God, it's dead. And actually it was just a terribly underexposed film. It wasn't feeding our project at all. So we were thinking, oh my God, oh my God. And then suddenly the next film comes on and then bang, you know, it's alive.
Now that many of the great art-house cinemas like the Lumiere, the Scala and the Metro have vanished, and multiplexes and studios have moved in, we're seeing a tremendous appetite for what you might call non-commoditised cinema. Cinema that does away with a conventional single screen in a darkened room. Cinema that allows film to spill out beyond the edges of the screen and sucks audiences into the world of the film. Cinema as an experience, and that is what Exploding Cinema does.
The biggest show we ever did, and one of the most memorable, was in a disused Lido outdoor swimming pool. We set up a big screen in the deep end of the swimming pool because it was empty. And we put lights all around the edge. And then we had installations in the changing rooms. And we had a separate video room just showing video in the ticket office. And we had pyrotechnics. It became sort of almost sort of chaotically autonomous. There are actually things, on the night we did it, there are actually people doing things there who we had no idea who they were or how they were involved.
Another group that has really seized upon this desire, reinventing the way in which we experience film, is the phenomenon that everyone seems to be talking about at the moment, albeit in rather hushed tones, secret cinema.
I'm making the agreements. I take your name then?
It's Chris.
Chris, OK.
And we were told to come here wearing dressing gowns.
Be assured, the Wellbeing Foundation has your health and happiness at heart. Tell no one.
How many are there with you?
Just the two.
All right.
The way that Secret Cinema works is that the audience will go online and join a mailing list or go through Facebook or Twitter.
If your symptoms persevere, come back and see me, okay?
Founder and director, Fabian Riggle.
We create a dialogue with the audience of what the film might be, and so everyone's kind of interested in getting involved. And then we don't tell them where the event is until a few days before. And then when they get to the event, it's as if we're trying to create a world of the film.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm Nurse Sestoni. I haven't seen anyone in this group before. You're new patients, yes?
Yes.
I want to help you, but first, can you keep a secret?
It's, I guess, a little bit a protest, I think, from the audience of not always for everything to be laid out by the studios or by, you know, to say you must watch this film and this critic tells you to watch this film. Well, you know, I think the audience want to be part of a bit more of a game, a bit more of a kind of a club, I suppose.
Good morning, Mr. Finch.
I'm tired.
So the audience become characters in that film, and then we create a world for them to interact with, because we think it's really important that cinema should belong to everyone. It should be something that, if you're passionate about it, you can become as involved as you want.
Now, everyone, try to relax. Film therapy will begin shortly. Yeah.
This vision of cinema as participatory, inclusive, non-reverential, is very much in the spirit of exploding cinema. And Professor Ian Christie thinks the appetite for it is here to stay.
It's filling a gap in our lives. Seeing the images has become too easy. We can do it on our mobile phones, but we want something more. And that more, I think, is supplied by exploding cinema, secret cinema. Film needs to be brought back to life. Some people might say it's getting in the way of the film, but actually I think what it's doing is refreshing and reviving what is already present in the film. And that's important, because if we don't have that, then I think the whole promise of film is in danger of getting lost if we don't actually have something vital happening. And I'm very pleased that exploding cinema continues to explode.
These are interesting times for experimental cinema in the underground. After a decade of boom and New Labour's Cool Britannia saw alternative, non-mainstream arts receiving more attention than in the past. Now, once again, with cuts and austerity measures, money to support up-and-coming filmmakers is drying up. Bad times if you're looking for funding then, but great times if you're looking for something to kick against, which surely is what the underground is all about. Whether or not radical cinema receives a fresh boost from these times of cuts and austerity, exploders are confident that as the group approaches its 20th birthday, its future is secure.
There's a strange kind of self-destruct or obsolescence written into the film club thing, which is that it takes a lot of energy to do it and you can't make any money out of it. So you can do it for a while, but eventually you're going to be thinking, you've got to find a way to kind of sell this thing to make money out of it. But the thing is, the exploding's always going to be around because we don't care. We never wanted to make money and we never wanted to go into the commercial industry.
Prediction-wise, without my crystal ball, I would say that exploding cinema will continue in one way or another. It's not going to end. It may not be called exploding cinema, but, you know, we weren't the first and we won't be the last.
Exploding Cinema was presented by Asif Kapadia, produced by Hannah Rosenfelder, and was a Just Radio production for BBC Radio 4. And the programme is this week's Radio 4 Choice podcast. For more details, please go to bbc.co.uk/radio4.